Welcome to Headlines. This is David Lichtenstein, and today Purim is in the ear, and everybody knows that Purim is Vayichtov Mordechai said Dvarim Eila L'Kayim Aleim U'Matanos L'Evyanim. If Purim is in the ear, Tzedakah is in the ear. So we're going to be doing a show just about Tzedakah, and we're going to have three really special Talmidei Chachamim. We have Rav Hagaon, Rav Avram Chaim Feuer, the Edom of the Talz Rav Zuchron Lavracha, Rav Gifta, and he's the Morah D'Shmeitz of Tzedakah. He's the author of the Tzedakah Treasury, printed by Art Scroll, so he's really the expert, the Morah D'Shmeitz of Tzedakah. We will have Rabbi Yoir Afman. He's the Mechaber of over 10 Sfarim, noted speaker. And then we'll have the Avbezdin of Bezdin Meisharim, Rabbi Ari Marburger, one of the young, brilliant Talmidei Chachamim that Lakewood has blessed our community with, all speaking about Tzedakah topics. You're listening to us on WMCA, that's 570, or WMCA.com. Or you may be listening to us on the Nachum Siegel Network. That's at NachumSiegel.com. And we're also on Nachum Siegel at 11 a.m. Monday mornings. We are also on WSNR 620 a.m. at 7 p.m. That's drive time, fabulous time, on Tuesday evening.
Emeritus Yisrael on the line, Rav Avram Chaim Feuer. Rav Feuer was the Rav for many years in Miami of Ora Chaim, and then he was Rav in Muncie of Beis Avram. I live in Muncie, and he was quite a legendary Rav while he was here. He's also a prolific author. He's written many Sfarim for Art Scroll. He is the son-in-law of the Telzer HaShashiv Zechon Levracha, Rav Mordechai Gifta. And today, he is Rashiv in Ramat Beit Shemesh in Mesiris Mordechai. It's an honor to have you with us, Rabbi Feuer.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Rabbi Feuer, we wanted to ask you some very relevant shilas in Hilchos Tzedakah. And we've gotten from our audience, they've emailed in a number of shilas that we'd like you to discuss. And Tzedakah is something that, almost everybody, Balabas, Yeshiva Man, young, old, is something that we're constantly, it's at our doorstep on a daily basis. It's in shul, it's at our homes, it's almost wherever you go, by a chasana, etc. So I'd like to ask you, many people ask this question. I've gotten this from two or three people, and here's the question. I can't afford to buy houses for my children, yet I'm constantly approached by people from Eretz Yisrael collecting to buy homes for their children. Do I have a chiyuv to give them?
Okay, that's a very good question. It is a common question. Let me just preface by saying that the Rambam, at the beginning of Hilchos Matnas Aniyim, you might say, asks the question, what mitzvah of all the Tariag mitzvahs do we have to be most meticulous about more than anything else? And the Rambam says we are obligated to be more meticulous in regard to fulfilling the mitzvah of tzedakah than we are with fulfilling any other positive mitzvah, say, from the Torah. So there is a chiyuv to be very, very careful with tzedakah. And to know what we're doing, and people really should be well informed. The answers that I'm going to be giving you today are from my sefer, which I wrote on tzedakah, called A Tzedakah Treasury for Art Scroll. And all the details are there, and they will just give somewhat, shall we say, a cursory overview and some tidbits from the Sefer. So I'd like to preface with a very important general statement about Tzedakah, that once we understand this, we have a whole different perspective on how to give Tzedakah. It comes from the Parshat Tzedakah is in Parshat Re'eh, in Perek Tezvav, that's the Devarim Perek Tezvav 15, from Pasuk 7 to 11. There it says in Pasuk 7, the very first Pasuk, it says, if there shall be a destitute person amongst you, here we have two words, from any of your one brothers, from any of your cities. Two separate categories here. This explanation is from the Netziv in his Hamek Dover there on the spot. He notices over here two separate categories of tzedakah. One is called Me'achad Achecha, the other is called Bachad Sharecha. And it continues, Ba'artzecha asher adonai lehecha nosein lecha, lo sameitzet levavcha, you shall not harden your heart, Neither shall you close your hand against your destitute brother. Says Nativ that the two categories, the two actions at the end of the Pasuk, they correspond to the two categories in the beginning of the Pasuk. In other words, first we have Me'achad Achecha, one of your brothers. In reference to him, it says at the end of the Pasuk, Lo Sa'am, it says Levavcha. When he's your brother, then you shall not harden your heart. The second category, which is Bachat Sharecha, in the gateway of any of your cities. So corresponding to him, it says in the Torah, Lo Sikpo, it says Yodcha Me'achicha Avyon. You shall not close a fist, clench your hand from your destitute brother. What does that mean? That means that there's the ikar tzedakah, there's the main tzedakah, and then there's an auxiliary tzedakah, a secondary level of tzedakah. Let's go to the secondary level first. The secondary level is when someone just pops into your life out of nowhere, b'chacharecha, they just show up in your gates. Here I am, knocking the door, we're coming over to you in the street, or in the shul, or at the chasna. It's b'chacharecha, you don't know him, you have no shaykhus to this person. This person is going to collect anywhere and everywhere. There's no obligation to check him out. You don't have to have a whole checking system for this person. It's impossible. How can you check him out properly anyway? So what you do is over here, you follow the Gemara Bava Basra. The Gemara Bava Basra, Daf Ches, says that Oni, HaKhoizel HaPsachim, you give him a Matona Mu'etes. An Oni who's going around at all the doors, him, you have one obligation. It says in the Torah, says the Gemara Bava Basra, it's Testament Aleph, 9a, the Gemara says, in reference to the Oni who goes from door to door, there is a Pasuk in Tillim, Perek Ayin Dalet, 74:21. It says there, David HaMelech says, Al Yashov Dach Nichlom, do not turn away empty-handed, he whose spirit is crushed, lest he be put to shame. So therefore, it's required that you open your hand to him, and you lay sick points as yotcha, give him something. Don't embarrass him. He has come to your door. He has stretched his hand to you. So this tzedakah is not the real tzedakah, the rehabilitative tzedakah, where you're taking responsibility for somebody, where you're doing something real for somebody, where you're opening up your heart and your home to this person. No, not that. It's impossible. Every person who comes in and comes to your door and knocks is not shaykh. So on this secondary level of tzedakah, someone, a stranger, comes into your gates, this person, the Torah says about him, lay sick, but says, Yotcha, don't clench your fist, give him something. Don't embarrass him. Al Yoshov Dach Nichlom. Don't turn away the empty-handed, the person whose spirit is crushed, lest he be put to shame. That's the secondary tzedakah. I call it defensive tzedakah. The primary tzedakah is the beginning of the Pasuk. Pasuk begins and says that the main tzedakah is one of your brothers. A brother means somebody who you know, somebody you have some level of achrayus for. You have a shaykh with the person, you have some knowledge of the person. He's a brother, means he's on the same level as you. He is not known to be a poor person. He hasn't taken the mask of covered off of his face. He's not going around collecting by other people. People don't even realize he's a poor person. And he's trying to preserve his dignity. He's still a brother of yours. He's somewhat on some level of a peer like you are as well. So when it's achecha, someone you know, and you're close to, you have a shaykh, and he's a chosh of a person still, doesn't mean he's a person with dignity. So that person is trying to preserve his dignity. Of him it says, Leisa'ameitz es levavcha, don't harden your heart. This person, you have a chiyuv to open your heart up to him, listen very carefully to his story, and see if you can help him in some way, and you help him in a more meaningful connection. You get involved with this person more, based, of course, on the level, different criteria that you have to look into. So
charity really does begin at home, then?
Yes, it does begin at home. Of course, it's to everybody. So getting back to your question, this will answer a lot of questions. So the fellow says, it doesn't make a difference what he's collecting for. If you don't know who the person is, there's no shaykh to this person, and now he's going around the entire world, you have no special chiyuv towards this person. He said, the whole world is his pushka. So this person, you give him a complimentary donation, whatever you decide in your life you're going to give him. And there's, of course, the people who come every morning to shul, I call them the sweep, and they're coming by. So you give them whatever you want to give, the minimum amount that can buy something with. I don't know what it is today in America. A quarter. That's fine. You can buy something still with a quarter, and that's fine. That's all you have to give them. You want to be, I don't know, if somehow it looks a little more chashiv and you want to be, so you give them, sometimes it's hard, someone comes to your beautiful house. That's the problem we have. They come to my doorway, I have a lovely house, and I do have money, and they're coming, but you're not, honestly, it sounds brutal maybe, but you're not mechuyev to listen to the story, treat him with dignity. You can keep him by the door. I mean, you don't have, if they're sweating, and you, it sometimes it's dangerous to invite them into the house. You don't know who the people are. Your wife certainly shouldn't invite them in. Your kids certainly shouldn't. They don't know who they are. So you want to bring a glass of water to the door? Fine, whatever. You'll decide what level of security you want to maintain. You give them a minimum donation just to be yikes so that you're not ignoring them. And now I'll tell you a chiddush I told you of Chaim Kanievsky Shlita, but it's such a big chiddush that I just somehow didn't want to put it into my sefer yet. I had to sleep over it a bit. And that is, he's maskim to me, Reb Chaim, that it says, Ani hachoyzer lapsachim, the Gemara says, which is brought down in the Rambam in the Shulchan Aruch. It doesn't say Ani hachoyzer latzedakah. It's Ani hachoyzer lapsachim, which means if he comes to your door, if the only made the effort to come to my door, and even if it's not my name, but he knows there's somebody living here, he made an effort to walk those extra steps, or took the car with the driver to my house. No, he's chayav lapsachim. He's making a special effort to see me, so I have to give him something, not to embarrass him. But he's tam chayav lapsachim in the streets. I don't know who he is. I'm walking down the streets, Yishlayim, certainly by the cousin. I don't know who he is and what he is. Or he's coming to a chasn, or coming to shul necessarily. I don't have to give him anything, really. It's only a chayav lapsachim. We made a specific effort.
Who do I give to first? A kollel or my son's school? This is from Avram Rosenbaum from Flatbush.
Okay, well, this brings us into a whole new story called Priorities in Tzedakah. Shulchan Aruch Yerideya has a long list of priorities in Tzedakah. However, let it be said this, that the long list is that there's various qualifications about this long list. Rav Moshe Feinstein, Nigros Moshe Yerideya, Chelik Aleph, Simon Kuf Mem Dalid, says, a big chiddush, that all the priorities in Shulchan Aruch for the priorities are only for a gabbai tzedakah, where it's not his money, and he has no right to make decisions on his own where the money should go to. But however, if it's individual, personal, private person, give his own money, he can divide. This is a suggestion for him. For him, he's saying, you know, this is, if you don't know exactly what to do with your money, here's a list of priorities, what you do. And the yircha first, and different things, and your relatives first, etc. It's a long list that has to be gone through. But if you know what to do with your money, and you want to give it to specific places, so it's, you have tovas hanor, Rav Moshe emphasizes. Tovas hanor means benefit of gratitude, which means that when you give truma, lamashal, truma and mice, another matnas aniyim, you can give it to the kohen that you want. Here too, you can give your tzedakah to whom you wish to give the tzedakah to. So you can determine the priorities. When it's a gabbai tzedakah, it's not his money. He's collecting money generally from the oilam that they should have a kupas tzedakah. So there, when he's being approached by people, he can't make his own decisions, what's good for what he likes and his own family. But if it's my money, then I have tovas hanor, a benefit of gratitude, and I can give the according to my list of priorities. And Reb Chaim Kanievsky told me also, he said, although it doesn't sound like that in Shulchan Aruch, he said it's suggestions. It's not Dafka Chiev.
Which is
and
interesting.
And Rav Palm had discussed this with Barichas as well. And Rav Palm told me he based this on a Netziv in the end of Parshas Shlach, where it says about Tzitzis, so there, he has a whole arichas there, the nativ, that you have everybody has their own heart and their own eyes, and in general in life, to decide things that are not clear in the Torah, priorities or focusing, there every person has their own right to decide. Everybody chooses the mitzvah that's his. Some people want to be atzala. They're consumed with atzala. I couldn't do atzala. I just can't do atzala. Some people are consumed with learning be'ilin in the Gemara. Some people are consumed with b'kachaylim. You know what? This is a gift of God. It's a message from Hashem. Hashem says, yes, fine, get into atzala, get into b'kachaylim, get into chesed shel emes and bury people. Be whatever you get, izaka. Everybody has their thing.
and some people, and even in Torah says the Nitziv, some people are Lamdanim and Lamdis in the Gemara, some are in the Psak Halacha, some are in the Agadata, some are in the Kabbalah. Everybody should follow their heart and their eyes, and it's perfectly legitimate. And Reb Palm told me, based on that, that therefore in Tzedakah as well, every person should follow their heart. Again, you shouldn't be exclusive and neglect everybody else, but this is a general statement I'm making. Everything has to be qualified very clearly, and I try to discuss it in my Tzedakah treasury more at length, that generally speaking, you can emphasize what you the yeshiva you like the best, and the yemaisid you like the best, or the tzedakah you want to give, you want to give lots to tzatzalah at the expense of a yeshiva. Okay. Again, the Kodra Moshe is my private money, I can do what I want. And even the Kodra Palm, not emphasizing much of the Moshe point, everybody has their own heart and their own eye.
Now, would you extend that to, let's say, family too? Like, can you give your kailul or your son school before family?
Absolutely. Your own family?
Yeah.
Yeah, again, you can't neglect your family. Again, the details, I don't want to be, like, you know, nailed into this details. But the general rule is generally, yes, a person has a lot of leeway to decide what's appropriate for him. This is an old question. What's more chashuv in general? If I don't know what to do, I don't know if any kids, should I give it to yeshiva katana? I mean, to a cheder or a day school like we call it in America? Or should I give the kollel? What's more chashuv, advanced education or elementary education? Without anything to do with my family, and or I like the Rosh Yeshiva. That's an interesting question. This is sudden lakan. And Reb Moshe has the place that the kollel is taka very chashuv. Even though you have to have day schools, but kailim require a lot of chizuk. But that's in a general way. But if it's me, my son's yeshiva, which is struggling, and I'm not paying his rebbeim, then I have every right to say that I know kol is very, very chashuv, but I have a moral responsibility to my own son's rebbeim and the menayel and the school.
As you pointed out, Rabbi Foya, by the way, it's wonderful having on this topic such an expert. You pointed out that Reb Moshe is really a chiddush, and it's a wonderful practical chiddush, and it is a chiddush because, for example, when the Shulchan Aruch brings the dinim of kedima, priorities in tzedakah, let's say the
right.
Gaon says that the sources he'll bring, for example, he'll bring a safri that says we darshin it from achicho, mipsarchal to salim, or from the Gemara avedascha kaidim. So it seems that the Gra learned that each one we learn from Agzeres HaKasav, from a limud, and Reb Moshe is saying, it's not that case. It's really just advice.
If you don't know or you don't have any particular priority, you must follow this way. It's a chiyuv to take this into consideration very seriously. But if you know what you want to do and you have other considerations, then there's other considerations on your own money.
In other words, even though there's a din of Mabsarcha Alta Salim, that's just a suggestion. It's not. He's saying Mabsarcha Alta Salim is a suggestion and it's not a rule. Or
just like Kedei Machsoro, Achsheyechsalo, that you have to give the person everything he needs is also only a suggestion. It means that also falls into the realm of tzedakah. You might think giving to your close relative, that's tzedakah, filo, because it's my brother, my parents, that's also called tzedakah. You might think that giving this person, Kedei Machsoro, this very wealthy fellow with all hard times, and for him to go around the jalopy is bizyonis for him, bizyonis, and I want to buy him a better car, you might think that's an extravagance, and it's not called tzedakah at all. Kamashal, that's also called tzedakah. But you don't have to. And the Aruch HaShulchan says that this law of Kedei Machsoro, to give a person what he needs, is the Aruch HaShulchan B'Feirush, Hilchos Tzedakah, says that's only in the olden days when most people had money. And the ani in the good times, in Eretz Yisrael, was a very big exception to the rule. It was abnormal to be poor. So then a rich person can adopt a poor person and say, I'm going to take care of everything you need. But today he says that the norm is just the opposite. In Gaulis, where everybody is poor, and the rich are few and far between, it's not shy to really, I mean, you could, but it's less of a chiyah to even think about such a thing because you want to spread the wealth a little bit. You could do it, but it's less shchiach, and it's less on the horizon.
Here is a question from a listener in the Five Towns. Is it appropriate to not allow collectors into a chasana I am making for my son, as I find that they disturb the wedding, and it is just in bad taste?
That question I was asked many times. I did research on that, trying to remember. But personally, I would be a bit loath to to do that. Even though in shuls as well, the same question. I told you that Reb Chaim said clearly to me that from the beginning of brachas to the end, the last kaddish after Shir Shel Yom, everybody is putter from giving anything because you're being osek b'mitzvah of davening and you're putter in the mitzvah of giving tzedakah. And in my shul here in Eretz Yisrael, in a rather affluent neighborhood in Shari Chesed, we have droves of collectors every day, mama droves, and more every day, and it could get disturbing, etc., but I would not recommend making rules against that, chas v'shalom, because tzedakah is very important for davening before davening, and it's very important that you shouldn't give it after, because kriyishma, it's going to stare your kriyishma. And I personally just give very little during davening. There might be 40 collectors. I just give a few of them. I don't want to be, they expect something from me already because we're old friends, so to speak. So I give them a half a shekel. But during davening, it's an absolute distraction that bothers me. But I'm not going to ask for them for coming into shul. You can't do that. And a lot of people like to give during davening. It doesn't bother them. So you can't force such a thing. And saying by a chasna, we were toying with the idea to say a sign on the outside that there'll be somebody outside by the door handing out dollar bills to everybody who comes. But again, that's a really a bazillion toy. I'm not sure. That's a bazillion to the neum. Give them $5, $10. It's introducing a whole new level of, it's not shayach. So you have to look at the aniyim as a gift from the Rabbanu Shalom. As I state in the Zohar and Paz Vayakel, that every time an ani comes to your door, it's a gift. It's a derana. As despite what I told you, I'm not being mezalzel on the ani achazel apsachim. It is a gift to the Zohar HaKadosh. You don't throw a gift out of your life. And as the pasuk in Kohelis, which says, Tein chelik l'shiva, the gam l'shmona, gift to seven and to eight, Rashi says there in Kohelis that it means that if seven aniyim came to your door and he gave each one of them a gift, and then another squad, another sweep of another eight come to your door, don't say I gave enough already. Don't say, Rashi says, no. You know, you have money now, you give it to them right now. No one says you give a fortune, and you should be happy because today you have the money to give to them, and who knows what's going to happen tomorrow. And sometimes there might be a need, you need a lot of zachias. You know, a lot of zachias, and you'll be happy that you gave to all 15. These will save your life. So give it now when you have it. Because if you don't give it now, what's going to be later? Give it. Give with joy. No, again, small matana, small amount, but don't be annoyed that you gave too much or they're bothering you in your house. During davening, you have this p'tur of oisik mitzvah pata mitzvah. So that mitigates. You can ignore them during davening. Yes. You can ignore them. They're bothersome. But a chasna, I'm having a good time, and we're spending a fortune on lavish chasna. That's gaiva to say, oh, I don't want to have these kind of people coming around. That's not nice.
Now, the Mishnah Berurah does bring in Hilchos Kriyas HaTorah that Isaac b'mitzvah, patam b'mitzvah, he brings it, interestingly, during Kriyas HaTorah, not by davening, but you're saying...
Well, Reb Chaim said to me, the whole davening.
The entire davening.
It's true. It is a shter.
Now, as an expert in Hilchos Tzedakah, could you give our listenership what prioritization you would recommend? Like, for example, there are so many needs. You have the Rabbeim, then you have people coming around and they say, you know, without day schools, you have kids would be, you know, we would lose children. You have the Kiruv people coming to say, we're losing 80% of Acheinu Beis Yisrael. Give us some sense of prioritization as an expert in this topic. How should we be prioritizing? The Shulchan Aruch said a 500 year ago prioritization. How would you give for the 21st century an American person? Give us some sense of prioritization.
Honestly, first, I'm not an expert, and I certainly don't have Ruach HaKodesh. I will stick to the Hayroa that Rabbi Palm gave me, based on the Netziv. The halach b'dark, it's a pasuk on Kohelis, halach b'dark libecha, that if you want, I give my mice, I separate my mice from my chaymesh, I want to give it right. I think a person should think about it. We sit down with our accountants every year to figure out our expenses, and we have meetings in our businesses about budgeting, et cetera, et cetera. Tzedakah, at least, the Rambam says you have to be more meticulous with tzedakah than any other mitzvah. Got to sit down, figure out what my income is, a projected income for this year is, and figure out what I want to give and where in general, nothing's in engraved in stone. And I have the right to figure out my own priorities. I love this particular Kailo. I happen to love the Rosh Kailo. I want to help him out. That's fine. doesn't mean it's the greatest kol in the world, but for me, it's all from God. God, he was maitzichem ba'enai. Certain Rosh Hashivas come to me, I like them, I want to help them, that take the burden off them. So if I help them out more than I give others, that's okay. Because tzedakah is the most subjective mitzvah in the world. There's much clearer halachas how to buy a pair of tefillin and how to buy an esrog. But by tzedakah, it's very subjective. It's not objective. Sometimes a bundy comes, you say he looks too slick and too rich. Sometimes the bundy comes, he says, "I such a schlump. I don't like this guy." It's very subjective, to tell you the honest truth. But as far as the priorities and where this, you have to, a person should sit down, discuss it with somebody else. Maybe just with people come to me as a rav. People, I was very honored that people came to me with their tax reports. They came to me with their income reports. They said, "Rabbi, the Rav should know this, how much money I make a year. Can you help me figure out how to allocate the money in a proper, some level, some general level of what's appropriate?" That's very smart. Sit down with your Rav.
But that's the amount. But if you had to give us a klal as to... You say,
no, they ask you where to give also. I would tell them again, I don't have their heart. Their heart is their heart. I think Kiruv is very, very important. I'm into Kiruv. But again, I have a big priority for the yeshivas of my children or grandchildren. And some of the yeshivas, I know that there's a lot of other people. I give it to whatever. I have different cheshbonos, and I have the right to have my cheshbonos. And Hakar Zatayv is a big subject. The yeshiva where I learned, the yeshiva my children learn is very, very important to me. And I have a car to talk to these places. It's fine.
So you're saying the message is that you're saying tzedakah is very personal and everybody has to give it where their heart speaks to them.
Of course, you can't give exclusively to your own family or exclusively to your own kids' yeshivas. You have to be honest and legitimate and legitimately think about it. But you got to think about it. You got to sit down and think, I'm not going to give it like spur of the moment. Someone comes to my door, I get a call from the yeshiva, boom. Let me think about it. I told you, to this day, this Balabatim will call me up, and they ask me these shilas. So Rav Moshe Feinstein used to always clog zich. He said, people ask a question about the kashas of bubble gum, and they ask them about the kashas of this, whatever, this product, and they don't ask them questions about Meiser. Rav Moshe was very pained by the fact that in Hilchos Meiser, no one was asking questions. That's essentially why I wrote the Sefer. It's like a treasury because of this reason. It hurt me also to see how people throw their money away in a very haphazard fashion.
That's a fantastic way to close. I really like to close with, that's just an amazing comment. Rabbi Foyer's point is, he says, people ask the kashrus of bubble gum, but on tzedakah, which is one of the most important mitzvahs we have, and it's really the fruit of so much of our effort and labor, we do it in a haphazard way without carefully setting time to think about where do I want to give my tzedakah, how do I want to allocate my tzedakah, how do I get the biggest bang out of my tzedakah dollar, and we don't give that adequate thought. I think that's a very beautiful thought, Rabbi Foyer.
You're very welcome. And allow me just be Messiah. You mentioned about being browbeaten. The minute somebody comes to your door or whatever, and they put pressure on you, and they're really talking, pushing you, you got to give me, that's one of the biggest red flags that something is not beseder. Because Shlomo HaMelech, people ask me something, Rabbi, do you have Ruach HaKodesh? I say, Shlomo HaMelech gave us the key. Shlomo HaMelech, the wisest of all men, said, Tachanunim yedaber rosh, v'osher yane azus. The poor person speaks with pleading. He's asking nicely and gently and sweetly. Tachnunim. He's not brazen faced. For Ashir, but if he's really an Ashir, really he's okay. Really, Yashir Azus. He speaks brazen faced and with chutzpah. So the minute someone acts that way and pushes you and presses you, you can give them your quarter and say goodbye. Zaga benched.
Well, thank you very much, Rabbi Foyer. It's really been an honor to have you on the phone.
It's been an honor to be on here. Thank you very much. Kol Tov V'Matzliach. It's a wonderful program. Kol
Tov. Thank you so much. Take care. That was a really amazing conversation with so many relevant topics to me, like the way he set down so clearly that all kedimus, all priorities are totally up to you. They're all just advice, but it's up to you, Rav Moshe's tshuva. And he also says how charity begins at home. I'd like to relate a wonderful story. When I was in yeshiva, our Rosh Yeshiva was Reb Shmuel Berenbaum in the Mir, and he was very devout, and he was a diligent, he was a tremendous masmid, and it upset him when people would show up late to first Seder. So what did he do? At 9:30, he would go outside, and if you arrived after 10, he would lock the door of the Beis Medrash, of the study hall. And you couldn't get in without passing by. So one day, he locks the door at 10 o'clock, and at 10:30, a young man, a student, comes rushing, and he stops him at the door. He says, you know, why are you late? So the fellow looks at Reb Shmuel, you know, with his angelic face, his white beard, and he says to him, let me tell you why I was late. He says, I left my house on time this morning. It was at 9:15, and I was rushing. I was going to come to yeshiva on time, and I hear somebody calling me, excuse me, young man, and it's a woman. And she looked very upset. She said, you know, my baby was crying the entire night. My toddler has, you know, one of these things. It didn't sleep well. It had maybe a stomach virus, and I didn't sleep the whole night. I have a migraine headache. You look like such a special person. Would you maybe take my child in a carriage, take him for a walk for an hour so that I could get a little shut eye and then bring him back? And this way I won't have to, I'll be able to sleep. I don't want to, I don't want to get sick, literally. So he says, you know, of course, it's a mitzvah. Who wouldn't want to do the mitzvah? So he said, I took the child in the carriage and I walked there. Not only for an hour, I did it for an hour and 15 minutes. And I brought it back to the mother. And the mother walked much better and she thanked me. She said, you know what? That was such a mitzvah you did. And I ran straight in and I came here. So the old rabbi, Shmuel Birnbaum, looked at the boy and he said, the young man, he said, you know, you did the right thing. And the boy looked at his Rosh Hashiva and said, Rabbi, he said, and what could I do if the woman who was crying was my wife? So Reb Shmuel Birnbaum used to say, that fellow got the better of me. Right? So charity really does begin at home. Tzedakah does begin at home.
We have with us the noted author and lecturer, Rabbi Yair Hoffman. He pens articles very frequently in the Jewish press and many other publications. We've all seen him on both Yeshiva World, etc. Welcome to the show, Rabbi Hoffman.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on.
So, Rabbi Hoffman, we're all besieged with tzedakah requests constantly, from people knocking on the door, from people in shul, to our local yeshivas, the rabbeim, etc. Can you give our listeners some guidance as to the halachas of kedima and tzedakah? Who has priorities?
There is a list found in Shulchan Aruch. Of course, we've got the first one is Torah institutions that are going that are in danger of knuckling under. That is one of the top priorities. However, there is also an issue of local institutions as well. Aside from local institutions, there are aniyim. And the local aniyim, of course, have precedence over other ones. Family members come before local aniyim. There's also an interesting obligation. A lot of people don't realize that there are family members that one would think should are not considered family members at all, but they actually are. An ex-wife is considered shero, and she actually has precedence over strangers as well. That's not too popular an idea, but that is brought down in the halacha.
So it's sort of a concept of alimony would have a halacha of tzedakah.
Yes, it would. It's interesting if the courts force you to do it, but it would have a concept of tzedakah, and if you have it in mind, you know, there's an interesting Chafetz Chaim also that says, mitzvos tzrichos kavana, mitzvos require intent to do them. On a biblical level, on a d'oraisa, if you don't have the intent to fulfill the mitzvah, you don't get credit for it. So, for example, the Chafetz Chaim writes in Sefer Avos Chesed, the idea of paying a worker on the day that he did the job, This is true when you pick up an item for repair. So if you have in mind that you're fulfilling the mitzvah of paying the worker on the day that he did the job, you get the doraisa. You get the mitzvah. If you don't have that in mind, so then you don't get the mitzvah. I think the same would be true here with the idea of alimony. If you have it in mind, then you get the mitzvah. If you don't, then you lose it.
So a question for you. I have a question here. It came in from Levy from Hempstead, New York. He says, I only have 3 children because I can't afford to have any more children. Tuitions are too expensive. But there are many children in our community who have 8, 9, 10, and even 11 children.
Many families, yes.
Who the schools give extreme discounted tuitions, but I can't get a discount because I work as an attorney. Is it fear that I should not be able to have more children because I work so that I could support people who don't work so that they can have 10 or 11 children? What's right?
Okay, well, first of all, we have to realize that there's a God in the world. And it's not that I can't afford children. If you're doing the right thing, you're an attorney, God will give you opportunities. So the idea of, I'm a working attorney, I can't afford to have more children, therefore I won't, is not really a Jewish concept. There's a God in the world, and he provides. You have to do your hishtablis. You've got to go out and work, and you've got to do what you have to do in order to make a living. But don't for a second think that it's you that's making the money and that the amount of money that you make is determinant of how many children you can afford. That's a mistaken notion. The institutions that exist that educate children, they're there to educate everyone. It's halacha in Shulchan Aruch that if the poor are there, you're supposed to include them. So yes, education, a Torah education, is something that needs to be provided to everyone. So I don't think that, A, that's the right attitude in terms of the parnasa that you're making, and B, when we help God's children, Hashem helps us. So I think if there'd be a change of attitude, you might be making more money.
Now, do you think buying somebody in a house is considered tzedakah?
The norm in Eretz Yisrael is not like the norm here. In other words, there you own the apartment. Here, the norm is to rent. So if it's a family that deserves tzedakah, so then you follow the norm of that community. On the other hand, you've got your own children to support, and I think that takes precedence. So yes, it would be technically considered tzedakah because that's the norm there. And if they fit into the parameters of what's considered an ani, then you do what's done in that norm. You follow that norm. That being said, though, we do have family priorities that come first. So
Rabbi Hoffman, if somebody knocked on somebody's door and he said, I'm going for Achnasas Kala to buy a dira for my son or something in Ramot, wherever the case may be, would it be fair that the response would be, well, my son, daughter, or for that matter, nephew or niece, don't have an apartment yet, and therefore they would come first halachically?
If they are in need of money, if they fit into the parameters of who isn't on it yet, there's no question that they would come first. What I would do in such a case is I would give $1 or $2 and be yotza the mitzvah of tzedakah and then say, look, I have other family priorities that come before that.
Okay, so here's a question from Yosef from Lakewood. He says the Ramah in Reishon and Aleph says that Parnasas Atzmo Kodemes L'chal Adam Ve'nuchayiv Laseis Tzedakah Ad Sheyeh Lo Parnasaso. A person's support of themselves, I guess, and their family as well, comes before others, and therefore one is not required to give tzedakah until they have their own parnasa. He says, how then is it that we here in Lakewood, a poor city, are constantly besieged by outsiders looking for money? In fact, in yeshiva itself, there is a non-stop stream of people going during Seder from shtenda to shtenda looking for money. Isn't this a clear violation of the Ramah when so many of us do not have money to survive on month to month without coming on to others? In which case, why is it allowed communally? In fact, when I was when I learned in yeshiva in Mir and Lakewood, I saw that too. You know, during Seder, from person to person to person. I mean, shouldn't the yeshiva have said, wait, this is against the halacha. Please do not come into the Beis Medrash.
I think the way yeshivas look at it is they want to educate their talmidim to have the ideals of Yiddishkeit, and that is to be balei tzedakah as well. It's not just learning Gemara. They also want the chinuch of being balei tzedakah, of being descendants of Avraham Avinu, balei chesed. So while technically, so what the minhag in many yeshivas is they appoint, many yeshivas have a rotation, so to speak, where they appoint a Talmud who looks over, you know, what the papers are, and goes around to the shtenders. They don't necessarily let the Oni himself go, and the Rosh Yeshiva of every institution, they are the ones that are, you know, decide on the chinuch of what the Talmidim and even the Kol Yungalite should be doing. And if it's their hashara to allow it, so then I think it's the right thing to do. You know, you don't have to give, $10 to everyone. You could give $5, you could give $2, you could give $1, you could even give a quarter. But the idea of chinuch, I think is important. And, I think that's the rationale that the Rosh Yeshiva do.
We get so many collectors who don't seem to want to work, but they have made a living out of collecting. They come year after year, the same people, every year with a different story. The first time it happens, you say some misfortune happened. The second year where they come, by the time they've come to my door, the fourth or fifth time, you say nobody could be a victim five times in a row. You just don't win the lottery that many times in a row, for good or for bad. Is there a chiyuv to give tzedakah to people who don't want to work? And I could sort of, as somebody who works 100 hours a week, between, I could sort of appreciate that type of sentiment. What would your attitude be?
Okay, so my attitude is as follows. There is, of course, no chiyuv to give tzedakah to someone who's able-bodied and could be working. It might even be an issue of a bit of a lifnei iver in that you're assisting him. On the other hand, there is a chance that there's some reason that we are missing. So what I would do is, whenever there's a suspect situation, give a minimal amount. Give a quarter, a dime, even a nickel. Your yoitza staka with the shava pruta, you know, give that. And this way, you know, you're not encouraging it, yet you're still rendering assistance if necessary.
Now, if I remember, there's a kliyakar on the pasuk of Azev Tazev Ima. He says, "Kan shuva la'atzelim." Here is an answer to give to the lazy ones who don't want to work. He says, "Azev Tazev is Ima is together with him, but he has to. You know, if he doesn't want to do it, then there's no obligation."
Yeah.
So, in closing, Rabbi Hoffman, who, if you had to say, you know, it's a yeshiva, or it's the fellow who lost his job down the block, doesn't have what to eat. it's the malamdim or the fellow who's, you know, struggling to put bread on the table? Who comes first?
Okay, if the person is struggling to put bread on the table and he's and the institution is not, you know, do or die, so then I would give to the ani. If it's a do or die situation for yeshiva, that takes precedence.
Well, it was an honor to have you on, Rabbi Yair Hoffman, to clarify this very complex and very noigeya. Thank you very much for your time.
We have with us the famous speaker, the author of Business and Halacha, and the Av Beis Din of Beis Hayra in Lakewood, Rabbi Ari Marburger. Welcome, Rabbi Ari. It's a privilege to have you with us.
Thank you.
So, Rabbi Ari, if somebody has given a mortgage on a home, or and it's undisputed, they gave a $400,000 first mortgage to somebody, they bought the house, and 5 years later, they stopped paying the mortgage. Does somebody need a heter arkois to go to Beis Din, or can they go straight to court to begin a foreclosure?
I think let's just take a step back and first discuss the concept of arkois, and then we'll get to this case, which is very likely an exception to the issur of arkois. I will just bring up a few thoughts. And the first is that the problem that you're raising is really indicative of a more basic concern. And that is, al pi halacha, dayanim are not allowed to charge for their time. At most, schar b'teila, if the dayan that you're going to has a job which he has to take off a certain amount of time to deal with the matter, he can pass along what he's directly losing. But in the absence of that, dayanim are not supposed to be charging at all for their time. Now, dayanim obviously have families to support, and historically what happened was the community undertook the responsibility of supporting the dayanim because it was a necessity. And the same way the reason why the small claims court are able to deal with a matter without charging you, they're not working for free. They're being supported by the public at large. They're being supported by the taxes. And therefore, the cost is being spread out among the entire population, not to the person who's particularly involved in the dispute. And therefore, the court system will incur a few hundred or a few thousand dollars of costs to deal with your $250 matter because it's needed for society to function. That is historically how Beis Din operated among Klal Yisrael as well. What's happened today is because we do not have any organized system of Beis Din, the community doesn't appoint dayanim, the community doesn't support the dayanim, and it's something which is really, everyone is ishkal yosher be'enav. People, when there is a Beis Din, it just simply means that three people got together and decided they're going to offer their service to the public, but therefore, that's where we have this problem, because we're not organized on a communal level. It's simply an individual or three dayanim that are investing the time in order to help people resolve their disputes. Now, when both parties are interested in resolving it, many Beis Din offer a small claims division where they will either charge nothing or a minimal charge for smaller cases just like the one that you mentioned, in order to make it viable, in order to enable people to resolve their disputes. More often than that, it typically will not come to a Beis Din. It will typically go to a Rav. The two people will sit down with the Rav and try to work something out. The Rav will give a psak, give a pshara, and that will typically take a minimal amount of time and at very, very minimal cost. When you're dealing with the unfortunate case where a person refuses to come to a Rav or refuses to come to a small claims and basically tells the person, you know, you either sue me in court or I'm not coming, you have a very difficult problem. In halacha, you could send a hazmona, and you can force the person to respond, and you can insist on going to a Beis Din that will not charge.
Yeah, but very few Beis Dins are going to send three hazmonas and give a heter arkois after a sirah for $250.
Okay, that's true. And
so what would be the heter to go then to? He didn't give me the heter, Reb David. He was really rushed, but what would be the heter to go to arkois because it's not affordable in Beis Din? Could you try to put some legs to it?
So the approach would be what do you do in a case where there is no Beis Din? A person lives in a country or in a location where there's no Beis Din around. It does not exist. So there are Mara Makaymais that permit litigating in court, and the basis seems to be that if the Isser is the Chil Hashem, the Isser is the Oveinu Pelilim, that you're rejecting halacha by choosing civil courts over Bezdin, that may only apply when there's a choice. And to the extent that you're in a place where there are no Dayanim, where there is no Bezdin, they're not rejecting anything simply because there's no other alternative other than walking from your money. So that itself is controversial, but perhaps he is extrapolating from that, that if it is not cost-effective to go to a Bezdin, that perhaps is what he's basing his heter on.
You're referring, I imagine, to the Rajba. Is that what you're referring to?
When you say, yeah, there are a number of other Marmakaimus. I don't believe that it's...
But let me ask you a question. This is going off halacha, but as somebody who's done a lot of Chayshemishpat litigation, why can't we as a community fix the broken Bezdin system? I mean, just recently, I got a letter. It was massively disseminated where somebody came to Reb David Cohn. It was in all the papers, so I'm not speaking out of school. It was in Eish HaTorah, you know, their CFO embezzled $20 million. They agreed to go to Reb David Cohn to a Din Torah. They both accepted him as arbitration, and he paskin that the man owns $20 million, and the man then... and it was enforceable in court. And this fellow then went to another Bezdin in Brooklyn... And that Bezdin said, no, they totally overturned Reb David Cohn's psak, and they said he doesn't have to pay it, etc. And Reb David issued a letter, he's saying, what's most astonishing to me is that a Bezdin which we sat on, many yeshivas, we never even got a call from the other Bezdin before they issued a letter that all our psak is batal. And this is from somebody who is certainly one of the Paiskim of America, David Cohn is, no matter, you know, you could hold these the Paisik, one of the, but he's certainly one of the great Paiskim in America. How do we, you know, it's, how do we fix a very broken system where many people sort of are intimidated to go to Bezdin because of, you know, anybody who sort of, you know, has a stamp, a rubber stamp, can open a Bezdin and become suddenly a dying and call himself. How do we fix this? Do you have any ideas?
So the issue that you're raising, as you correctly pointed out, is not a halacha question so much
as a
social or communal issue. As I mentioned before, a judicial system is a complex system, and they don't just spontaneously evolve. It's something that needs to be set up, and something that needs to be organized. And historically, we know from the times of Moshe Rabbeinu, there were dayanim that were appointed, there was a hierarchy of dayanim, there was... smaller cases, and what we'll call the Supreme Court, until you got to the Sanhedrin Gadol, until you got to Moshe Rabbeinu. Today, unfortunately, at least on a communal level, there's no attempt to organize a Bezdin.
Why is that? And let me go also beyond, certainly beyond social, and even beyond the Yannis. Your very esteemed father-in-law was the president of the Aguda for many years. Why has the Aguda not attempted to create, as the leading Haredi organization in America, attempted to create a Bezdin that would give legitimacy? And when I say legitimacy, it would mean all these pop-up Bezdins, you know, I'm sorry, you know, you get, you know, hazmana from anybody or everybody, and alternatively where you have Batei Dinim, which sadly could sit on a psak for 6 months or 5 months or 9 months while people are distressed and they allow, you know, why doesn't Aguda make this? I mean, having a court system is sort of the backbone of any society. Why hasn't Aguda, as our leading organization, tried to do something about this?
I'm certainly not going to answer for any organization. That's something which...
Yeah, but just could you take a stab at it, or just a wild guess?
Okay, so again, I don't want to take a stab at Aguda's motivation or any particular person. I will say in a general sense that having or running a Bezdin is a fairly thankless task, because just mathematically, you're going to have a case, there are going to be two sides, and in all likelihood, one of the two sides is going to come out upset with the verdict, and in more cases than not, both will, because whoever won didn't win enough. So for an organization that's involved with other activities to take on a Bezdin is... it's a fool's errand, because you'll undermine your ability to do all the other good work that you're involved with. So an existing communal organization that's respected and very active has this reputation to protect, and therefore it's difficult for them to open a Bezdin. If you're going to start from scratch without an organization...
I think you nailed it. I think that's a brilliant answer. Let me just tell you, share with you an anecdote that somebody came to the Maril Diskin, the famous Maril Diskin, who was Rav in Yerushalayim before that Rav in Brisk, and for the entire, and afterwards he lost and he was unsatisfied and he began, you know, issuing, you know, saying bad things about the jurisprudence involved. So the Maril Diskin called him and he said, it says, Elohim lo sekalal, you can't curse a judge. He asked the fellow, who do you think the Torah is referring to? The winning party or the losing party? He said, we would imagine the losing party. He says, and even to the losing party, it says an admonition, Elohim lo sekalal, you can't curse the dying. It seems that there is a certain point where we're supposed to respect that we do need law and order in society, or ishes riyeyu chayim b'loy, and that's why. But I think your reason as to why a reading organization hasn't come out with it is actually brilliant. But let's go back to halacha, okay?
Okay, you know, but before we go back, I just want one disclaimer. You know, our discussion was how come we're not fixing a system. I think it would be more accurate to say how come we're not improving the system. It's not quite, it certainly has its issues, but I don't think it's quite as broken as some people may believe. One of the reasons for that is that the most vocal people, the people who speak about the system or the process the most, are typically the ones who went through it and were hurt.
But how do you explain a letter, which I've seen from Reb David Cohen, where he says they totally invalidated our Bezdin's psak without giving us the courtesy of a phone call?
Mm-hmm.
And this is another leading dayan in Brooklyn.
I haven't seen the letter, and I don't know which Bezdin it is. I'm not going to comment on a specific case. But the fact that there are specific actors that perhaps do not do things appropriately is a problem, but does not mean that a person who has a litigation cannot choose a Bezdin that will have good results. You do not need every Bezdin to be perfect. You just need a Bezdin to be perfect, because, as you well know, when there is a dispute, you can never be forced to appear in front of a specific Bezdin. In the olden days, when there was a Bezdin Kavua, where a community had one Bezdin, that Bezdin had that power, and you were forced to submit to their jurisdiction. Today, where that doesn't exist, there's a lot of jockeying and discussion about which Bezdin to go to, but ultimately, no one can be forced to a specific Bezdin. So the fact that there are one, two, or three Batei Din that you may feel do not act appropriately, you can always insist on avoiding those. And while you will not be able to impose your choice on the other party, but you can enforce that. It's something that requires mutual consent, and ultimately you can make sure that it's in a Bezdin that you're comfortable with.
Well, it was an honor to have you on, Rabbi Yair Hoffman, to clarify this very complex and very nageya. Thank you very much for your time.